Let's start with a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we bow our heads, acknowledging that you are the creator of this universe, and we're here to study that topic. In the beginning, you created. The first 10 words of the Bible are our topic for these last few weeks and the next few weeks. I pray that you would just open our minds to understand the truth, and we thank you for this time we can be together. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Anybody see those pink ribbons that are in the parking lot and tied to different things? Anybody know why they're there?
Were they there for the rummage sale yesterday to get attention?
Maybe the rummage sale, huh? Anybody know? Just thought I'd ask. I thought the church was teepeed when I came. Okay. We're starting part two. You might recall part one was how to think, and we're going to be dealing now with what to think for the next four meetings. Let's just review a bit of the background, why we did the part that we did that dealt with how we should think, what we're going to think. You might recall we ended with God's science exam. God was giving an exam to Job. And here's how the exam started out. Then God answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now gird up your loins like a man, and I will ask you, and you instruct me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding." Do you think that'd be easier to see if we turned off the lights? Or no? No? Okay. Whatever you'd like to do. Okay. And then the exam continues here. Who set its measurements? This is God speaking. Since you know, or who stretched the line on it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. So this is God giving the test to Job. You might recall that from before. Okay. Question for you. Why can God be so confident in what he says? There's this air of confidence, right? I won't say arrogance because God's not arrogant, but you could definitely see that God was speaking from a superior point of view. Do you agree? Okay, why is that so? What reason could you give for that flavor?
Because he's the one
that did it, right? Right? He's the one that did it, so he can speak from authority. Right? He didn't read about it in a book. Okay. Because he was there and nothing escaped his notice, he will not lie, he is the perfect witness. Now, he'll even notice the radioactivity that we missed, the whole class did, right, when I passed that bowl around. Right? So he knows everything, nothing escapes him. He's the perfect witness. So with that in mind, then Rick stood before the class and said, "Who thinks they know more about this than I do?" Now sit straight up in your seats. Pay attention. I'll ask you, and you're going to instruct me. Where were you when the poles and the trees were flagged? Tell me if you have understanding. How long have they been flagged? Surely you know. Right? We had a suggestion that it was from the rummage sale, right? If Jerry was here, I was going to ask him what he thought. He's not here, huh? He seems to know all sorts of things here. Who chose which poles and trees to mark? And how long to make each one of those little flags? Which one has my name written on them? There are two of them. Anybody know? Who tied them to the poles when my family was at home wondering where I was? Okay. Now, why did I do this? This is the closest to TPing a church that I've ever come to is doing this. So I was here last night, and there was nobody here, and I did it. So I can speak from authority because I know which two I wrote my name on. I know when I did it. I know how long the flagging was because I used my arm to measure it, right? And I had great fun being here all by myself doing this. But the point is, I did it, so I know what went on, right? If you were not here, all of you weren't, I didn't see anybody there, and you were just to look at the evidence outside, what conclusions could you make? The same conclusions that I made? Could you come close to what I could tell you about the real truth of why those flags are out there? No. Because when you start with the evidence and go back in time, the thought process branches and branches and branches and branches. It could be from an overzealous surveyor, right, that was here. Or maybe it's a high schooler seems to me the most reasonable reason, if it's not me. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of possibilities. And how do you know which one is right? You don't know unless you've got a witness. Right? And that's the point of the last few weeks. God is our witness. And if we are Christians and we believe that, and we believe the Bible is true, why don't we use that very important truth that if God is a witness, we should believe what he says? So the next time somebody says that something evolved, you can ask them, did you get that from God? And if they didn't, think about what God says is more important than what they say, because he's the witness, like I was the witness to put the flags up. Does that make sense? Okay, I'm going to take them down later. So don't worry about this. So how can we know what really happened in the past, which is really what this class deals with? The most reliable is if there was a witness to the past. If somebody was there living at the time and saw what was going on, that's the very best... The most reliable is if you were there. In other words, you probably won't question your honesty. You probably question your honesty less than someone else's honesty. So if you were there in the past, you being the witness would probably be the very best resource to find out, is it reliable? The second most reliable is if there's a trustworthy witness, someone that you can trust that was there, and you could ask them, what really happened? And you know, Christ did this with his disciples. He said, you are my witnesses. Go out there and tell people. Okay? And the least reliable way is to start with the evidence and work backwards. There are multiple possibilities, and so I just remind you that if all you had were the flags out there, and your task was to tell me who did it, when did they do it, how did they do it, right? You would be hard-pressed to come up with the story that I would tell you, because I am better fit as a witness to tell you what happened. Make sense? Okay, so God is in that place that he knows everything. He knows everything. Why are there different stories from the same evidence? I mean, whether you're a creationist or an evolutionist, all of us can read the articles and look at the evidence. The fossils we'll talk about next week. We all have the same evidence, so why do we have all sorts of different stories about how the evidence got here? Like, we could talk about the flags. What kind of stories could we come up with? A bunch of stories of some important reasons. You might recall we looked at Corinthians. Believers are equipped to understand. In other words, those who take the Bible as being true have a different perspective than those that think it's false. Now, we have received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit who is from God, so that we may know the things freely given to us by God, which things we also speak, not in words taught by human wisdom, but in those taught by the Spirit, combining spiritual thoughts with spiritual words. Now, we're going to contrast that with someone who does not think that the Bible is trustworthy. Some people think it's foolishness. And the verse in the Bible that gives us this information is also in 2 Corinthians, but a natural man does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, and he cannot understand them, because they are spiritually appraised. But he who is spiritual appraises all things, yet he himself is appraised by no one. So, I think one good reason, and there are several, of why we come up with different stories, different people, different stories, is that some consider the Bible as reasonable to consider, and some don't. Right? And you clearly can't come up with the same story if you bias your place to look by saying, I will accept this scenario, but not this one. In fact, I would hazard to say that most people that are not Christians and don't treat the Bible as authoritative probably have not read the Bible to really see how the creation story or the creation account really fits with the evidence. So that could be one reason why. Let me give you the story of the two men who were looking for a ring as an example or an analogy of what I was just saying. Pardon me, I'm getting over a cold here. You might have heard of this story. The story is that a man lost a ring on the way back from the jeweler back home, and he lost it at night, and he's out there now looking for it, and he's under a streetlight, and he's looking and looking in the gutter, in the sidewalk, and like that. And a man comes walking down, and he asks, what are you doing? And the first man says, I'm looking for a ring. The second man thinks, well, gosh, maybe he needs some help. So now they're both looking for the ring. They're down there on their hands and knees looking for it. And the second man, after a while, asked the first man, why are we looking here? And the man said, well, I lost it between the jewelry store and home, but this is the only place we have light to look. And it's at night. Okay, now, could it be lost somewhere else? Yeah. And you're not looking there. Why? Because you don't have light to look by. So, in the same way, someone who is a believer, or someone who is a Christian who thinks the Bible is true, is able to evaluate all things. That's what 2 Corinthians says. How come they can evaluate all things? Because they understand the natural as well as the spiritual. And they can make a choice. You can't make a choice if you don't have choices to make. The most common misconception people have is the notion that evolution better explains the evidence than creation. We're going to challenge that one today. Because I think a lot of people think that. And I think the reason why is that they're brainwashed. They have the brainwasher's disease we talked about. They go to school and only get the evolutionary interpretation of the evidence, right? The teacher will say, look at this. The fossils all kind of look similar. You know what that means? Common ancestry, right? They're never told, well, you know what? If they have the same designer, maybe he just designed them in a similar way, like cars have round wheels, regardless of who makes them, right? So one way, you know, one reason why evolution is pushed so much is that people don't push the other perspective. They don't look at the creation perspective. And I think that's really, really sad. And you're going to see today that we're going to use logic, and hopefully you agree with me. You may not agree, and that's okay, that I'm using pretty good logic to show you that the creation explanation is a far better one than the evolutionary explanation if you just give it a fair comparison. Our first step is to assume that something foundational to our topic, something happened, that the universe is an effect that had a cause. You've heard of cause and effect, right? I'm part of the effect of why I'm here. The cause that I'm here is that I got out of bed today, right? I did some things in order to be here, and so did you. Cause and effect seems like a reasonable way to think. Does every effect have a cause? And I'll just help you think this out. How about God? Did God have a cause? He's an effect. Did he have a cause? Well, if something has a cause, then there must have been a time before that when it wasn't there, right? In other words, if something exists and it was caused, then there was a time before that when they were not there. Now, was there a time when God was not around? No, he's eternal. So therefore, God had no cause. He's an effect without a cause. There could be more than that to look at, but I think God is the only example I can think of at the moment. Maybe you can think of some other ones where saying that God is cause, implying a certain period of a point in time, is not possible just because he is eternal. Okay, but we're going to assume that the universe had a cause and that it is an effect that had a cause. So our first question is, where did matter come from? Where did matter come from? All matter is composed of, we're learning this in school, so come back in 20 years, this could be different. All matter is composed of atoms, and those atoms have a tendency to combine in various ways to make molecules that make up solids, liquids, and gases. And here are some examples. Hydrogen atoms, two of them stuck to one oxygen atom, makes water, H2O, right? How about salt? Salt is made up out of two elements, sodium and chlorine. The sodium sticks to the chlorine because they have opposite charges. The sodium is positive, the chlorine is negative, and they repeat one after another after another. So in the salt that we eat, the information there is just the order of the sodium, the chlorine, the sodium, the chlorine, the sodium, and the chlorine. A water molecule is just H2O, 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 right? Even ice, like a snowflake, is just water molecules that are stuck together in a hexagonal pattern. So the question we're going to be looking at here is, how did these atoms get here? And the second question is, how did they get ordered? So let's take this. How did the atoms get here? The matter we commonly deal with has two important characteristics. It's composed of atoms, and they are. In the case of living things, the order of the atoms is very complex. You see, salt is just sodium, chlorine, sodium, chlorine. Water is just H2O, H2O, H2O. How many words would it take to write out the pattern for salt or water? Well, one sentence will do, right? It gets even boring after one sentence. But when we deal with living things, the complexity is incredibly more than that. Okay, so where did the matter come from? Did the Big Bang make the atoms? Okay, that could be a reasonable thing to ponder. It's in my astronomy book, and I teach it. But I teach it critically, not that you have to believe it. But what caused the Big Bang, right? If the Big Bang is an explosion of material, and let's just assume for the sake of time here that the Big Bang did occur, what caused the Big Bang? So where's the cosmic chicken that laid the cosmic egg that exploded that we call the Big Bang? And for that matter, who caused the cosmic chicken that laid the cosmic egg? See? In other words, to say the Big Bang made the atoms doesn't really tell you where the matter came from. All it does is tell you that there was an explosion. And there's a really interesting concept here. That when you read an astronomy book about the Big Bang, they'll go page after page after page of what happened an hour after the Big Bang, 30 minutes after the Big Bang, 1 minute after the Big Bang, right? 0.00037 of them to 1 seconds after the Big Bang. Then when you get to before the Big Bang, look for any article on before the Big Bang. There are very few articles. Very, very few articles. I found one in the New York Times about it, which is kind of like more speculation than anything else. In other words, we don't know a whole lot about what happened before the Big Bang because scientists love to deal with matter and energy. If you give a scientist atoms and energy, they're as happy as a clam, and they'll tell you what's going to happen when. But if you say, we don't have anything, why don't you make it first? They'll look at you like, right, go to church or talk to a philosopher or whatever, but they have to have something to work with. So before the Big Bang really doesn't help us. Here's a quote from that LA Times article about a year ago. If we imagine the universe shrinking backwards like a film in reverse, this is the Big Bang now, the density of the matter and the energy rises toward infinity as we approach the moment of origin. Smoke pours from the computer and space and time themselves dissolve into a quantum foam. Our rulers and ruler, like measuring ruler, and clocks break, explained Dr. Lind, a cosmologist at Stanford University. To ask what is before this moment is self-contradiction. That's why you don't see a whole lot written about it. It's self-contradiction. It's nonsense. What happened before the Big Bang, the cosmic chicken, is a nonsense thing. So does it really answer the question where the stuff came from? I'll leave that up to you. I'm just wondering, is there more to it than just happened, that kind of thing. How does the Bible answer the question of where the matter? Well, we don't have to look too far to find that out. For example, in the book of Hebrews, we read that by faith, we understand the worlds were prepared by the Word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things which are visible. So the things that are physically present in our universe were made out of things that were not visible. Okay, so that's kind of a clue. Also notice the Word of God is in that verse. Or how about this one from the book of Psalms? By the word of the Lord, see we have the word again, the heavens were made, and the breath of his mouth, all their hope. Another one in 2 Peter, all things came into being through him, and apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being. And the him that's there in 2 Peter is... Okay, now, isn't it true that if God speaks things into existence, you know, speaking atoms into existence, that we would call that a miracle? If I could do that in this room, you probably would say, hey, that's a miracle, because that's something that humanly is not likely to occur. And do you recall the purpose of miracles? Going back a few weeks, we went through Joshua. There's a great verse that talks about the reason why Jordan was parted. And it says that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, so that you may fear the Lord your God forever. So if God spoke things into existence, and that would classify as a miracle, is this miracle that happened in the past doing what God intended it to do? In other words, is it causing you to be fearful of God? Now, when my dogs sometimes aren't happy with me when I don't feed them on time, I'm not fearful of them. Sometimes my family members are not real happy with me because I do some really dumb things, right? And I'm disappointed, but I'm not really fearful of them. But you know what? God is an entity where if I'm not pleasing him, there's a reason to fear him, because he is not only in charge of things and made everything, but he's also the judge. So there is a higher authority than my dog, my family, like that. Even it's God. Is it a reasonable reaction to fear the one who spoke this universe into existence? Yeah. And if you don't believe he did, maybe you don't, or not in you in particular, but in general, people that don't believe this perhaps don't respect him. Because if you understand, if you believe that he did, he is someone definitely and to fear. God is eternal, but he created the universe at a moment in time. Okay? In other words, he said, in the beginning. Now, in the Bible, it talks, I didn't put this verse up here, but it's in Job where he's saying that the angels were singing, or the stars were singing. Something else was going on while creation occurred. So that's another indication that it occurred at a moment in time when something else was there prior to that. Let's take a look at the order in living things. This is a thought experiment. This is not a real demonstration. If we were to put a live mouse in a blender and turn it on for a few minutes, and then have the cap on so no atoms of the mouse could leak, you turn on for a few minutes and then stop it, and the mouse would not be the same, to say the least. Right? It wouldn't act the same and like that. So the mouse is out of order at that point. And really what's going on is that all the atoms are there, but they're just simply out of order. See? So our other question now is, not only do we have stuff here, but it has to be ordered if we're going to have salt, if we're going to have a snowflake, if we're going to have a mouse, or you and I, it has to be ordered. A Boeing 747 has more than 4 million parts. Not one of them flies. Okay? Now, what do you have to do to get that thing to fly? Put them together in the right order, right? And somebody better than I should be doing that if it's going to fly. So order is an important part of things that do things beyond the properties of the material that make them up, right? Like I'm trying to talk, and I don't think carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, hydrogen, if just in bulk, could talk about creation. You know, we do things, we have properties that are beyond the properties of the materials that make ourselves up. But that's only because we have order to the atoms that make us up. Without the order, like putting the mouse in the blender, we're no longer able to do those things. The order of atoms in DNA molecules carries all the information needed to construct the organism. So your DNA that's found in almost every cell of your body has the blueprints to make you, you. That you've got two arms, not 10, that you've got 10 fingers total, not 20 or 30 or 40. The color of the hair on your head, all that stuff is in the DNA. If you could take a DNA molecule, a human DNA, and unwrap it, it would be, uncoil it, it would be about 3 feet long, about 6 billion biochemical steps. Complexity is enormous. And here's a quote from an evolutionary book. You can always find creation books that will talk about this, but here's a book written by an evolutionist. Physics books may be complicated, but the objects and the phenomenon that a physics book describes are simpler than a single cell in the body of its author. Those students taking physics may not agree with that if they're in the middle of physics. And the author of the book consists of trillions of those cells. Many of them different from each other, organized with intricate architecture and precision engineering into a working machine capable of writing a book. So they do things kind of remarkable. Look at this. Each nucleus contains a digitally coded database larger in information content than all 30 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica put together. And this figure is for each cell, not all the cells of the body put together. So the DNA in your body is called complex. More so than the sugar we eat, than the water we drink, right? It's very, very complex. Richard Dawkins he's written a great book, The Blind Watchmaker, a bunch of others, that really kind of deal with how did things come to be and where did the order come from. Let's compare the amount of information. Halite is the mineral name for salt. So how could you describe the information in salt? Well, sodium chlorine, sodium chlorine, sodium chlorine in three dimensions might fill a sentence worth, right? How about the DNA? 30 volumes of 500 pages. I just assumed that a volume of Encyclopedia Britannica, which I don't have, I just assumed 500 pages. Imagine the detailed information. I mean, imagine the complexity in the encyclopedia compared to one sentence. So the interesting question is, how did that complexity get the order get into living things? If I write a letter, is the information in the ink? Well, I tried it, and here's what happened. Yeah. Now, the information's not in the ink. If I were to say, I love you, and if it was in the ink, I could throw the ink on the paper, let it dry, and mail it to you. Right? Information is not in the ink. The information is in the order of the ink, right? Isn't that true? I can order the ink a bunch of ways to give a bunch of different information to you, right? I hate you, I love you, I'll be back at 10 o'clock, whatever the information is, but I'm ordering that information, right? The ink. How can I convey I love you? Here's some possibilities here. I can put ink on paper. Done that with my wife a whole bunch of times. How about magnetically? I could record on an audio tape or a video tape or a computer drive. I could record the information, I love you, couldn't I? Isn't that information there? You could play it back, you could watch it maybe. How about electromagnetic waves? If I get on the phone and say, Sharon, I love you, isn't that information in the electromagnetic waves? It has to be decoded at the other end. The other phone doesn't have a memory saying, okay, what did he say? A, B, C, D, E. No, it gets the information called what? I love you to decode so you can hear it again. How about visually? I could say this. And if you were watching me, you could tell, right, that I said I love you. I could do it that way. I remember once, what was it? It was Valentine's Day. I got some roses, and I put rocks in there, and I said, I love you. I'm a sentimental guy. Okay, so there are a bunch of ways to do it. Now, who cares? This is really important. Information is not tied to a material. It can't be. In other words, the DNA that's in your body is, the information is not in the DNA. It's in the order of the atoms, but it could be written on a paper to fill 30 volumes worth of paper, right? It could be magnetically stored. That's what we're trying to do now, is to try to decipher the DNA code, right? Isn't that what we're trying to figure out, what all of the information is? So please don't think of knowledge or order, I should say, as dependent on a thing, because it's not. Information, I personally believe, you can disagree with me, but I think information can exist independent of our physical environment. I think it can exist without it. And so information is not tied to any particular element or method of transmission. In a sense, information is independent of physical things. And Einstein thought it was one of the most significant considerations of anything you could consider. I'm paraphrasing here because I think I left the slide out. Einstein said that it was a very important thing about, just to think about knowledge or order. Where did it come from? It's not tied to things. It is in, the things simply express the order. Okay? Okay, so how do we get order in the creation scenario? What ordered everything? Sorry, I did have it in the wrong order here. Einstein viewed nature and the origin of information as one of the profound questions about the world as we know it. He was very much aware of this. Okay, the creation scenario. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Now, you think words have information to them? Yeah, you can't have a word with any meaning unless it's got information. Isn't the order of the letters important? That's what a word is. Okay. So if in the beginning was the Word, this is the first verse of John. What does that tell you? In the beginning was what? Right? How about this one? Oh, that's mine. In the beginning there was information. paraphrasing what we just looked at. Or how about this in Genesis 1:3? Then God said, let there be light. Notice he said, let there be light. What did he come up with first? Information. Then what happened? There was light. Genesis 1:6, then God said, let there be an expanse separating the waters above from the waters below. In Genesis 1:6 and 1:9, but notice that he said, that's important. And then in Genesis 1:11, he said, let the earth sprout vegetation. Notice he said so. Again, the words have information. God said, let there be lights in the sky. He said, let the waters teem with living things and birds fly. Genesis 1:24, God said, let the light bring forth living, the earth bring forth living creatures, creeping things. And then God said, let us make man in our image. Do you notice that every one of these is preceded by, then God said. Did God have to do that? I don't think God has to do anything. But it's there, and I think it's another indication that you could say, if God said it, there must have been information prior to the appearance of those things. And if God is the God of the Bible that is described in the Bible, he can do anything. So if he says, order those atoms that I'm going to make, I think it's going to happen. I don't think we have to wonder, can God, he can do anything. Since living things contain an enormous amount of information and they were fully functional at the moment of creation, see, it wasn't that Adam was a baby and had the, right, or that Adam was a bunch of atoms and somehow somebody had to put all the atoms together. God must be the source of the information they contain. You can't escape that conclusion. If you make something and it's fully human, or you make a bird and it fully flies, or you make a tree with seeds on it, right, it's organized, right? It's not this kit you bring home and put together. It's totally there, right? An organization takes information, and I think God is the one that not only made the atoms, but ordered them in addition to that, so that they were fully functional. Read the following verses and decide who is speaking, what is he doing, and what and when is he doing it. Okay, so this is kind of a riddle here. So think about who is speaking, and then when is he doing it. This is in Proverbs. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of his way, before his works of old. Before his works of old. From everlasting I was established, from the beginning, from the earliest times of the earth, when there were no depths, I was brought forth, when there were no springs, that's a created thing, right? Abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, mountains were created, right? And before the hills, I was brought forth. While he had not yet, now the he there is Christ, while he had not yet made the earth and the fields, so those are created things, right? Nor the first dust of the world, when he established the heavens, I was there. When he inscribed a circle on the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies above, when the springs of the deep became fixed. Notice we're talking about before creation, aren't we? Right, that's the time frame here. Before creation. When he set for the sea its boundary, so that the water may not transgress his command. When he marked out the foundations of the earth. Then I was beside him as a master workman. See, he's contributing to the creation process. Doesn't a workman help the process? Whatever the work is, a workman is supposed to be involved with that. And I was daily his delight. I used to help my dad make walls and stuff. That's really a good time. Rejoicing always before him. Rejoicing in the world, his earth, and having my delight in the sons of men. He was participating in this. Okay, now the answer, I kind of played a little trick on you. The answer was before this, but I wanted to let you think about it. In an earlier verse, but the same chapter, Proverbs 8:12, it says, I, wisdom, this is before the verses that we just looked at. I, wisdom. So who is this? Wisdom. Dwell with prudence, and I find knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance in the evil way, and the perverted mouth I hate. Sorry, pride should not be capitalized, I don't think, or and. Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding, power is mine. So what do you read about here about wisdom? Wisdom was there when Christ created. Wisdom is connected with knowledge and discretion. And what does it take to order atoms to make living things? It takes knowledge, doesn't it? Right? You just can't shake those atoms up in a box and say, okay, they're out. I mean, I suppose you could. However, if we consider the creation scenario, it seems as though we have some evidence to say God did it. Would you agree? That God seems to have ordered things? Okay. Webster defines wisdom as the faculty of making the best use of knowledge, experience, or understanding. So we know that Jesus, the Creator, that's from the first chapter of Colossians, he's the Creator, he worked with wisdom while he created. And that makes sense, because the creation is ordered. That's what I want to make, because it's ordered. Okay, now how about the order in the evolutionary scenario? We've looked at the creation scenario. How would you order things if God, who is all intelligent, didn't do it? Okay, how could you do it without intelligence? How much information can random chance produce? Could random chance produce the information found in living things? Well, that's partly what's taught in books. Natural selection, as we'll see, seems to make that more plausible. Take a look at this first step here. I'm going to pass out some envelopes, And I'd like three of you at a time to use one envelope. And if you're only sitting next to one other person, then maybe the three of you could use that one. Maybe the three of you could use this one. And I'll just pass these around the room. Please do not open the envelope. Pass out a few. Let me go pass them down. This envelope has some letters in it. And I'd like all of you to be able to be close enough, there we go, to someone with an envelope so that you can see what we're going to do. So one person in your group, whatever group that is going to do this. Don't do it yet. I'm going to tell you what to do. You're going to draw a letter out of the envelope. And you're going to do so, don't do it yet, you're going to do so without looking. You're not going to look at it. You're going to just, you know, if you have to, close your eyes. You're going to pick it out. You're going to put it down. Keep the letters in order, that the order drawn. And then I want you to tell me what the letters spell. Okay? Russian words don't count. We're looking for an English word. Okay? Please do that. Take them out one at a time. Put them in order like on the chair next to you. And have your partners watch as you do it. There are 10 letters. There are 10 letters. You're going to draw them all out, but one at a time. Okay, did anybody spell an English word that they recognize? What?
Not with all letters.
Okay, all the letters have to be used. You got to use all 10 letters. What English word was spelled? Anybody have an English word? Yes, sir. What? Oh, that's good. When I did this, I knew he would have a comment. I knew this. You know, it's a neat thing about the men's retreat. You get to know some people, and we had a great conversation. And I thought of this guy. He's a great thinker, and I knew he'd come up with something. Okay, anybody come up with an English word that they know the definition to? Okay. The chances that you would draw the letters to correctly spell out the word I intended when I cut out the letters, and that Sharon checked because she knows what's going on here, is 1 in 10 factorial. The exclamation mark means you multiply 10 times 9 times 8 times 7 times 6 times 5 times 4 times 3 times 2, and then 1. And you get one chance in 3,628,800. Since we don't have that many people in the room, the chances are that it would not show up likely in this group of people. Now, it could show up in this group. I'm not saying it would not, but the chances are not likely that it would. Okay? Okay, now think about the chances of drawing the correct letters for the words in 36 volumes of the encyclopedia out of 26 letters. I won't even attempt to put it on the board here, on the screen, but it's like one gigantic not likelihood. Okay. Now, the word I had in mind is complexity. See if you can order them in complexity.
Yeah.
If I haven't lost any letters to your envelope, you should be able to spell complexity. Yes, sir? What's that? Oh, yeah, I like it a lot. Yeah, I use that. Yes?
The first 8 letters spell exotically.
Oh, exotically for the first. That's good. Good. It's too bad it wasn't what I meant, but that's okay. Okay. Now, what did it take for you to get the word that I intended you to get? Order, right? You can be a little proud this morning. Didn't it take intelligence? In other words, you needed to know how it was spelled to put it in order, right? But if you didn't know how to spell, the order was not obvious. In fact, hidden. I mean, there was no order that I was intending for it to have. In other words, we didn't get the word, right? Because the probability is not very good. But if you read the evolutionary literature, the books, the textbooks, and everything like that, it's quick to inform us that natural selection dramatically improves those odds. Here's what natural selection is. If there's a trait that an organism develops that it didn't have before, like let's say there's a mutation in the DNA, so that let's say a bird has a different shaped beak, go back to Darwin and what he did, let's say that there's a different shaped beak to a bird that no other bird has that beak, maybe that beak is now strong enough to break a seed, that a seed open that's in its environment that no other bird could break. Let's just make up something. And so that bird able to do it would have more food and therefore would be able to survive on more food better than the birds that are not able to do this. And so maybe that bird with that extra strange beak that had an advantage could pass that on to their offspring. And their offspring then would have that beak. And they would then be better survived. This is called natural selection. Nature selects those that are better to survive because they have an advantage. And those that don't have an advantage are selected against. So you have it kind of both ways. Those that are selected for that have an advantage and those that are selected against. You probably all heard this in school, but let's make sure we're all aware of this. Right? Okay.
You might have forgot.
That's evolution. Okay. Here's an example from the newspaper. Lowly guppy helps scientists validate evolution theory. To test the theory of life history evolution, this guy works at UC Riverside. He removed guppies from this river in Trinidad. I always thought guppies were in stores, but I guess they got to come from somewhere. And they come from this river in Trinidad. Anyway, the predators there were cichlids. I guess that's how you pronounce it. They're also in the tropical fish store. It's another species of fish that preys on the adults. Now, they transplanted the guppies into a tributary of the river where there were no guppies, and that the primary predators were killifish, and which primarily prey on the young. After 11 years, boy, that's a long time to study guppies, man. After 11 years, corresponding to 30 to 60 generations of the guppies, they found that the transplanted guppies began to reproduce about 9 days later on the average, 76.1 days of life rather than 67.5. Believe it or not, if my son Danny was here, he would think that was really interesting. Because he's really into tropical fish, but now he's in the Air Force doing something else. They also produced fewer progeny per brood, and the young were slightly larger. Now, to demonstrate that these changes were caused by inheritance rather than the local conditions, the group captured fish at each site and bred them in the Riverside Laboratory. Remember, they went through a bunch of generations. Okay, so it's not the same one. They found that the fish continued the reproductive behavior exhibited in the wild, indicating it was genetic in origin, and that predation was the most important factor. Okay? So, you know, there are lots of examples like this. I just kind of like the guppy one, where this kind of evolution can be demonstrated. But what kind of evolution is illustrated here? They began with guppies and they ended with guppies. Okay, so this demonstrates variation in guppies, but not guppies changing enough to be reclassified as a different organism. So let's just make sure we're not making this more than it is. It's a story about guppies and how they can change, not necessarily about changing a guppy into anything else. What would be necessary to change guppies into something that would no longer be classified as a guppy? Would the environmental influences need to change? Just some thoughts here. Or would you simply have to have enough generations, right, of the fish to really do anything new? Just some food for thought. This is an example of microevolution. Microevolution involves small changes. This is not molecules to man or fish to philosopher. It's not the kind of evolution that the fossil record is supposed to be so good at telling us happened, right? Oldest living things were what? Blue-green algae. Then what do they turn into? Humans. All right? Okay, well, that's not guppies. Other common examples. In the books, we read about the peppered moth of England, that when the trees got dark because of pollution, the birds saw more of the white ones and ate more of the white moths off the dark trees, and when the trees got cleaner, there were more white ones than there were before. But that's just moths. That's not this kind of evolution. The other one could be the fruit flies. Fruit flies go through a generation rather quickly, so you can bombard them with X-rays, gamma rays, neutrons, you name it. They go through their generations quickly, and they came up with fruit flies that are different colors, double sets of bodies, double sets of wings. blind ones, ones without eyes, ones with legs growing out of their eyes. But when they got all done, you'd never look at it and say, hey, it's a dragonfly or it's a horsefly. They're all fruit flies. Okay, so lots of examples of that. There's even a biblical example. For those that don't think this is true and you believe the Bible, this is good stuff. Jacob, remember that Jacob was tending the flocks of his father-in-law, Laban. And the dominant gene for these animals is the white color for goats and for sheep. And the ones that are not white is a recessive gene. So taking his father-in-law's flocks, which are all white, then he cared for them, and his wages would be the non-white offspring. Okay, I'm looking at the time, so I want to keep on going here. But you can see there that what he did was, to try and get more offspring, he tried to change the odds a bit. He put in front of the animals rods, which had been peeled. The bark was taken off. He put these peeled pieces of wood in the gutters, the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink. Now, my dogs, when I rattle the bowl, they come. And if the animals are mating and you always have something there when they mate, I would hazard to guess that maybe that thing that's there might remind them of mating. That's a possibility. Okay, and there may be some other ones too. But anyway, the old idea was that if you put something there that you want the animal to look like, it would turn into it if it saw it. That was the old idea. Okay. Moreover, when the stronger of the flock were mating, Jacob would put the rods in the side of the flock in the gutter so that he might mate. But when the flock was feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler ones were Laban's. This guy was crafty, right? He was trying to build up his flock, right, at the expense of his father-in-law. Think that he was just like sinning like mad. Think about this. God gave the blessing on this whole thing. And it came about at the time when the flock was mating that I lifted up my eyes, this is Jacob speaking, and saw in a dream, behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and mottled. That's kind of interesting to see that, because they were the white ones. Then the angel of God said to him in the dream, Jacob, I said, here I am. So God is now speaking to him in this dream. This is God speaking. God said, lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled. Now, God knows everything. He knows what genes they've got. And so they did have the characteristics that he was after there. For I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. So God was involved with this. And in fact, if you want to make it a miracle that he kind of caused more of the offspring than was reasonable to have the markings on them, then I have no problem with that. But the variation in the animal's color is the microevolution that I want. It's even in the Bible there. Now, in our analogy of ordering the letters, this process of natural selection could be illustrated by changing our process of selecting letters. Now, I know we're kind of running out of time here, so I'm just going to tell you how you could do this, same thing with the letters, but do it now by involving natural selection. You could draw the letters from the envelope, but return those that are not the C's. Okay, so you can do this if you want to, but let me just save some time and explain what I'm talking about. If you put all the letters back in there and pull out a letter and say, gee, is it a C? No, it's a X. You put it back. That's a trait that wasn't advantageous. It's back and it's gone. Selected against. Let's say you keep drawing out, you're putting it back until you get a C. What do you do with that C? Ah, that's an advantage. That's advantageous characteristic. I'm going to keep the C. Okay, then I'm going to keep drawing and I'm going to keep going until I come up with an O. I'll keep the O. That's another advantageous thing. I'm going to keep going and I'm going to come up with a M. But I'm going to put all the ones back that aren't M's. I'll eventually spell complexity by keeping the letters that are going to spell complexity. That's like selecting some but rejecting others. Understand? Okay. Okay. What's the probability of drawing letters to get the word complexity that way? It's 1 in 55. That's a whole lot better as far as I'm concerned. How about you? Wouldn't you rather have odds of 1 in 55 than 1 in 3 million, whatever, if you want whatever it is you're going for? Okay. Drawing letters and keeping each one as we did the first time would require, on the average, 30,600,000 some separate draws. Now, the reason why that's 30 million, not 3 million, is that it takes 10 draws to get the one word. Okay, so you would get your wrist would be pretty darn tired if you were the one, right, doing that. Okay, Whereas doing it the second way, using natural selection, would require on the average only 550 draws. Because it's, remember, it's 10. You have 10 each time when you're trying to save those. Okay, so it seems as looking at this whole thing, that means that natural selection improves our chances of getting the right result by about 55,700 times better. And at this point, and this is where the books leave off, right? It says, problem solved. Excuse me. All we have to do is say natural selection, that helps the process and makes the selection of these traits much more likely. However, you probably caught the problem with this. Here's a quote of a book that talks about this. Complex adaptive systems learn as they grow. Genetic mutations are chancy, but natural selection and the evolution of complexity are not. Natural selection preserves the gains and eradicates the mistakes. All the books tell us that. And this is the same article, just continuing. A monkey randomly typing will never produce Hamlet. But a monkey that learns, or a computer system that holds all correctly sequenced letters and disregards the rest, all on natural selection, will peck out to be or not to be in a matter of minutes. Does this happen at the cellular level? It does. Does it happen at all levels? It does. Look who wrote it, Richard Dawkins. Okay? He's very much in favor of this, and he's writing this as a review of Michael Behe's book, Darwin's Black Box. Now, Michael Behe's not a creationist, but he's critical of evolution. Okay, so he's writing this in response. Okay, so if the monkey can keep the letters, right, or the computer program can keep the letters, we'll be able to spell things out. Is it possible that through natural selection or through human intervention, as we saw with Jacob, microevolution has occurred during the time from the creation until now? However long you think it's been since creation, you think that microevolution has occurred? It happened with Jacob. Okay, it happened with the puppies we had, right? We had basset hounds. They didn't quite look like your mom and dad. Okay, so I think that's a reasonable thing. But can we extend the concept of microevolution to also result in macroevolution, where there's a different organism that develops? Some people think you can. In this article on Scientific American, what you do is to have enough time. Time is, in fact, the hero of the plot. The time with which we have to deal is on the order of 2 billion years. What we regard as impossible on the basis of human experience is meaningless here. Given so much time, the impossible becomes possible, the possible probable, and the probable virtually certain. One only has to wait. Time itself performs the miracles. You can try that with the lottery if you want. Yeah, you must believe miracles. Yeah, good. If I run a 10-minute mile in January and then a 9-minute mile in February, because I run every day, and an 8-minute mile in March, and I keep improving the same rate each month, I'm going to run a mile in zero minutes, right, by October, right? That doesn't make sense, does it? Because you know there's a limit to how fast I can run. The question is there a much the microevolution could change? Are you going to be able to get something which is a different organism, macroevolution? And there was actually a conference that was done, I forgot the year and I can't read that too well, Science magazine, about this conference. The central question of the Chicago conference was whether the mechanisms underlying microevolution can be extrapolated to explain the phenomenon of macroevolution. At the risk of doing violence to the positions of some of the people at the meeting, the answer can be given as a clear no. They got together to try to figure out, do they think this thing could happen? The answer was a clear no. This is Science magazine. Here was the guy who is a professor of genetics at the University of California who was there. He quotes this, but I am now convinced from what the paleontologists, they study fossils, say, we'll talk about next week, they say that small changes do not accumulate. Now, here's a definition of evolution that I got from the Grolar Multimedia Encyclopedia. Man, I'd be so thrilled if this was in textbooks. I'd pick the textbook. Evolution is the process by which all living things have developed from primitive organisms through changes occurring over billions of years, a progression that includes the most advanced animals and plants. because evolutionary events in the past are not amenable to direct observation or experimental verification, the process of evolution over the course of Earth's history must be inferred. Boy, is that a great definition. Then I go into what inferred means, because that's a thinking man's or ladies or person's definition of evolution. It's not that evolution is wrong, is not true. It's how, what kind of evolution we're looking at, and then what is the evidence for it? Thinking, or is it backed by evidence? No, macroevolution has never been demonstrated in the laboratory. People say, but it's in the fossil record. Wait until next week. We'll look at that. Natural selection plus circular reasoning equals macroevolution. Now look for this. I'm sure you found this already here. Here's what causes sight to occur. This is the biochemical description of sight that was found just in the last 20 years or so. When light first strikes the retina, a photon interacts with a molecule called 11-cis retinol, which rearranges within picoseconds to transretinol. And a picosecond is a very short period of time. The change in the shape of the retinol molecule forces a change in the shape of the protein, rhodopsin, I believe is how it's pronounced, to which the retina is tied. This is from Mr. Behe's book, Darwin's Black Box. It continues, the protein's metamorphosis alters its behavior, now called metahoptosopsin, I can't even pronounce that too. The protein sticks to another protein called transducin. Keeps on going there, as you can see. Goes on for four more paragraphs that I didn't copy for you. The details of sight are complex. But the important thing is, it's an irreducibly complex. This is an example of a molecular mechanism that is irreducibly complex. What that means is, no part of it can be left out in order for sight to occur. There are no redundant steps. They're all there. And in Michael Behe's book, he goes through and starts with a mouse trap. All the parts to a mouse trap have a purpose. If any of them is missing, the mouse trap's not going to work. If any one of these steps is gone, it's not going to work. So who cares? Well, if each letter in the word complexity now represents one of those molecular steps, not the beak in the bird, right? Not the different shape of wings so it flies better. If one of these steps is now one of the molecular steps in the process of sight, no longer complete traits, then an average of 550 draws, sight should occur, right? Right? No. Here's why. Recall in the quote before, the monkey who could type to be or not to be, there was a condition. The condition was, listen carefully or look carefully, a monkey that learns, or a computer system that holds all the correct sequence letters and disregards the rest. How can a monkey learn something that never existed before? Good trick, huh? How could a computer know what letters to disregard and what letters to keep? Unless the computer knows what? The whole thing. That's called circular reasoning. Circular reasoning means you start with the thing that you're trying to prove. We'll do it more next week as well with the fossils. But you see, the monkey or the computer program know what's going on. Unless the computer was programmed beforehand to check each letter against the actual Hamlet text, that's the only way it's going to know, hey, I don't want that letter, I want a different one. Right? You with me? Yeah? Okay. So what does that mean? You have to have intelligence to do it anyway. The monkey, the computer program, has to be programmed. There has to be intelligence to do it. So it's not blind chance at all. You before you start to get it. And as Dr. Lind points out, this is the guy that was in the article there about the Big Bang. He says, there is a chicken and egg problem about the Big Bang, or about the origin of the universe. Which came first, the universe or the law governing it? Or as he asks, if there was no law, how did the universe appear? Boy, do I think that's a great question. That is an awesome question. If you have no way to order stuff, it's not going to get ordered. Or at least it's less likely, I should say, to get ordered. Less likely to get ordered. So what do you believe? Did matter originate in the beginning from God or from the cosmic chicken before the Big Bang? Does the complexity of matter testify to the handiwork of God or to random mutations refined by natural selection? Which one makes more sense to you? Atoms, then information, or information, then atoms? It makes good sense that before a builder can build a house, arrange the pieces so that a house results, he needs a plan, he needs blueprints, and he needs information. When you consider that our universe is organized and that God had the ability to organize it, and you start with God, it makes perfectly good sense. And in fact, in my personal opinion, I hope you agree, maybe you don't, That's a better explanation than starting with atoms that somehow order themselves by trial and error and natural selection and come up with the complexity that we observe. So that's what I wanted to do. Let's go ahead and close in a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time. We thank you for the resources that we have available to study your word and to study all of the different discoveries that we've made. And I just pray that those who were checking out materials to read for this week would spend some time doing so and would be encouraged to think about your creation. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Okay, we'll see you all next week.